Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello and welcome back, everyone. It's your girl Holly, and you're here listening to Crime with Holly podcast. Thanks for joining today, and I am so pleased to have you listening to my podcast. If you haven't already, hit the subscribe button so you're notified every single time an episode goes live. Also, I encourage you to please leave a review, preferably a 5-star review, of course. And if you have some sort of kind words that you want to share, leave those as well. I know Apple allows you to leave a written review, but Spotify does not. I am just a few reviews shy of 100 on Spotify, and last I checked, I was like 6 reviews shy of 100 on Apple. I would love to make it over 100 reviews on each platform. Reviews not only make me feel good and make my day, but they also help others like you find my podcast. So as a small creator, I speak for all small creators when I say your reviews mean the world. Honestly, any engagement on social media means so much. Brianna this week left me a comment on Instagram saying that she stumbled upon my podcast and she's been binging it, and that little comment alone kicked off my Monday into high gear and gave me an extra pep in my step. So this is your reminder that little creators like myself do a happy dance when you guys engage with us, when you leave a review, you make nice comments, or even suggest our podcast to your pals. I haven't done a back handspring in like 25 years, but when I get a new Patreon member notification, your girl wishes that she could still flip it backwards. I get so excited, you guys, and it literally, like I said, means the world. You can sign up for my Patreon for just $2 a month and listen to every single episode ad-free. No more listening to those pesky ads. Sign up by visiting the link in the description of this episode or by visiting www.patreon.com/crimewithholly. Okay, I am done blabbing. So let's get down to business and get down to the real reason y'all are here today. Today's episode is going to be difficult to listen to. It involves talk of drug use and sexual abuse of a teenage girl and things of that nature. So listener discretion is advised. I do, however, want to know your guys' thoughts on this case. If you notice from the title, it says the death of instead of murdered. This case has been heavily debated about on whether it was accidental or legit murder. Either way, the adults in this case, whether they intentionally killed this young girl or accidentally, they're still POSs in my eyes. One is in custody for the rest of his life, while the other got off far too easy, if you ask me. And again, that is something I want to hear your thoughts and opinions on. So let's get into it. Today's episode is on the death of Alexis Rasmussen. Alexis Michelle Rasmussen, who went by the name of Lexi, was born on January 24th, 1995 to her parents Don and Kirk. Unfortunately, their relationship wouldn't last long, and Lexi lived with her mother in Ogden, Utah, and her father moved to Arizona. Despite the distance, though, Lexi remained in contact with her father, and it seems like overall they had a good relationship. Lexi was described as being no ordinary person, and her family believes that had she not lost her life at such a young age, she would have gone on to be the type of person to make a difference in the world. In 2011, Lexi was 16 years old, and she was your typical teenager. She loved to read, shop, dance, hang out with her friends, and be around her family. Lexi fought nonstop with her brother, but despite that, the two were extremely close and considered each other their best friend. Now, Lexi grew up during the time of MySpace, and like most teens during that time, she loved to take pictures and selfies to post on her page. She also loved to experiment with her hairstyles and colors. From the pictures I've seen, Lexi was one of those kids who would either be described as emo or a scene kid. And if you're not familiar with what that looks like, I will have pictures posted of her, but it's typically the choppy or layered haircuts with the side swoop bangs and then like the teased hair to make it stand up higher. Those types of kids would wear skinny jeans, graphic tees. They would wear the color black or sometimes bright neon colors. And usually their accessories included things like studded belts, layers upon layers of those jelly bracelets, and many people sported a lot of different piercings. I have to admit that I myself went through like a little phase of being like an emo scene kid, and studded belts, dark nail polish, jelly bracelets, Under Oath, if you guys are familiar with that band, t-shirts, like that was the jam. And then I had the side swoop bangs for sure. So like I said, a lot of them sported a lot of different piercings, and Lexi herself had her ears gauged, which if you're not familiar with that, that's when they have their earlobes stretched with the gauges or the tapers to create like a larger hole. You'll see like holes through people's ears because they have like colorful gauges in there. She also had two lip piercings. Lexi had many friends and was always very spunky and full of life. Being just a teenage girl, Lexi was still trying to figure out her way in the world and what she wanted to do with her future and her plans. She didn't really know what direction she wanted to go in, and she eventually got caught up with a not so great crowd of people. Some of her friends that Lexi associated with weren't the greatest influences, and she started to get in trouble at school and began experimenting with drugs and alcohol. She also ran away a few times, but she always ended up coming back after a few nights over at a friend's house. I will say that some of what Lexi was going through was your typical teenage behavior. Many teens get caught up in experimenting with underage drinking or smoking weed and doing things that most parents wouldn't approve of. That's totally normal, and I'm sure you all are just sitting there reflecting back on the things that you yourself did as a young teen. I know that when I was researching this case, I was like, oh, yep, I did stupid stuff like that too. But what is not normal here is the fact that there were other adults, and I'm not talking like 19 or 20-year-olds, getting Lexi to do these bad things. I'm talking full-fledged, full-grown, 30-plus-year-olds getting this teenage girl, and honestly, many other teenagers, into some serious and intense stuff. And those adults were named Eric and Dia Millerberg. Lexi first became acquainted with the Millerbergs because her good friend Brenna lived across the street from the family. But this family was known to a lot of people as drug dealers. The house had frequent visitors at all times of the day, and people just assumed that they were selling some sort of drugs from within the home. Neighbors were not a fan of the Millerbergs, and rightfully so, and they assumed the worst about them. And I will say that they had good reason to think poorly of them. It's been said that the Millerbergs would often be heard having huge knockout, blowout, dragout fights, yelling and cussing at each other. Obviously, the constant flow of customers, if you will, that came in and out of the neighborhood. They would also throw parties and just weren't the most neighborly kind of people, if you know what I mean. Not to mention, Eric Millerberg was a scary-looking dude. Dia herself was kind of strung out looking, but overall she was nothing in comparison to her husband. Eric is the type of dude that you would see walking down the street and feel immediately uncomfortable by him. He obviously looked strung out, but he was this big, scary looking dude with a shaved head, big red bushy beard, and tattoos all over his body, including a teardrop tattoo under his left eye. Which, as we know, can mean a lot of different things within the crime world. Usually, I immediately think of a teardrop tattoo as a sign of violence, like murder, but it can also mean time spent in prison, committing a crime, and so on. And I just want to stop, because I know people are going to say, oh my god, Holly, people with shaved heads and beards and tattoos all over their body doesn't mean they're scary or bad, or you should be afraid of them. And while I totally agree, I'm not saying I walk around scared of people that look like that. Actually, my neighbor, he's a bald dude, he's got tattoos, he's got a beard, and he's a great dude. I think when you guys see Eric, you'll understand what I mean by him looking like a sketchy, scary, not a wholesome, wonderful kind of guy. He also had a rap sheet that was long. And given the fights and the things happening at the Millerberg house, it was warranted that the neighbors felt uneasy by them. But what was really disgusting was that the customers, if you will, of Dia and Eric's were mainly teenagers. And not only that, but the teenagers would frequently go over to their home to party hard, drink, and do drugs. This was known as the cool house to hang out at because you could do whatever you wanted, the adults didn't care. And again, mind you, these adults were not young adults. They were nearing 40 years old hanging out with a bunch of teenagers. Talk about weird. What blows my mind about this entire thing is that while Eric was this criminal with a significant past, his wife, Dia, was actually a registered nurse. And maybe I'm just dumb and naive, but when I think of a nurse, a healthcare provider, a mandatory reporter being involved in all of this, it just makes me sick. So backing up a bit, as I said earlier, it was Lexi's friend Brenna who told her about the Millerbergs and how they held these crazy parties, they sold drugs, and gave alcohol to minors. And I just want to say that it was not Brenna's fault for what happened to Lexi. I can imagine she probably feels some guilt because she was the one to introduce her to them. But let us just remember that these were teenagers hanging out with grown adults. These were adults who had no business hanging out with children. No business providing these kids with alcohol and hard drugs. I'm sure they seemed really cool and exciting at the time, but Lexi and Brenna and all of these other kids who the Millerbergs got their claws into were young, impressionable teens who were easily influenced to get involved in some serious crap. And that is at no fault of Brenna or any of the other kids. The fault completely and fully lies at the feet of Eric and Dia Millerberg. And you guys are going to hear me say that a lot throughout this episode. I'm going to just talk about repeatedly because it just needs to be said. These were adults. These were children. They were hanging out together. That is not okay. After meeting Eric and Dia, Lexi became a very regular customer of theirs. And at first, she was just buying things like alcohol or weed that she would buy just on random occasions. But the more she became comfortable with them and the more she got to know them, she started hanging around their house a lot more. And it wasn't long that Lexi and Dia formed some sort of a friendship, if you will. They would go out and do things together. Dia would take her shopping. Lexi also started hooking up other friends of hers with Dia to sell drugs to them. Lexi would spend a lot of time at the house drinking and smoking with Dia, and she often would babysit their kids. Yes, that is right. Dia and Eric had two children that were living in this house. They had a 6-year-old and a baby that I saw was about 9 months old. So not only were Dia and Eric exposing teenagers to this kind of lifestyle, they also had their own children being surrounded by drugs and alcohol and a lot of domestic violence issues. Classy people, right? But anytime that Dia needed someone to watch the kids so she and Eric could go out to do whatever, Lexi was always quick to agree. Now, it's been said and reported that on occasion, Lexi would be paid for her services with drugs. And according to KSL.com, Lexi wasn't the only teen to watch their children and be paid with drugs. It would later come out that a woman came forward to the police stating that her son also had received heroin and other drugs as payment for watching the Millerberg children. On September 10th, 2011, Eric and Dia had asked Lexi if she could babysit so that the couple could go out shopping for their daughter. She, of course, agreed and went over to the house. While there babysitting, Lexi was texting her mom and everything was normal. At around 11:30 p.m., Lexi texted her mom something about Eric and Dia having come home, but they were going to be leaving again to continue their night out. And from my understanding, her mom was a little bit irritated that the babysitting gig was going so late, which I understand. It seems like Lexi had walked to the Millerbergs maybe and was expected to walk back home. But since it was so late when Lexi said she was still there, her mom just told her to spend the night at their house, come home in the morning, and to make sure that she got paid. I don't know how I feel about this entire situation. I am hopeful that her mother, Dawn, wasn't really aware of the type of people the Millerbergs truly were. Maybe she was unaware of the illegal activity happening within the home. I sure would hope so. And it does seem like she was unaware from some statements that she made at a sentencing hearing. And I'm not trying to cast judgment on Dawn for allowing her to stay there. I know it isn't completely uncommon for babysitters to fall asleep on the couch or something when the parents are out late, but I know that I personally would have handled things different and stayed up to pick my child up. But who knows, maybe Dawn had to go to work in the morning and she couldn't do that, or maybe she was working at night. I really don't know. Maybe she just felt safe with Dia because she was a nurse, and like I said earlier, you think of nurses in a good and positive light, or at least I do. I do know that Dawn had never met Eric prior to Lexi going missing. I am not trying to judge or ridicule Dawn for what inevitably happened to her daughter because it was not her fault. I am sure that it also is a very heavy weight she now carries on her shoulders, and so when thinking of this case, please give her grace. After telling her daughter to just stay the night there, Dawn sent about 10 to 15 text messages to Lexi, and she never received a reply back. She assumed that maybe Lexi had fallen asleep and she would see her in the morning. But come morning and still no sign of Lexi, she started to get worried. And after her phone calls and text messages went unanswered, Dawn decided to drive over to the Millerbergs to see where her daughter was.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
On the morning of September 11th, 2011, when Lexi Rasmussen didn't return home, her mother, Dawn, went to the Millerberg home to see where her daughter was. Dawn had previously met Dia, but she had never met Eric. And when Eric greeted Dawn at the door, she was startled, to say the least, and immediately felt uneasy about this man. She asked about her daughter, and both Eric and Dia seemed confused. They said that when they got home at 11:30 p.m., Lexi left their house for the night, which that contradicts what Lexi had texted her mom. She texted saying the Millerbergs had left again at 11:30. So that was the first red flag that something wasn't right. Were the Millerbergs lying, or was Lexi the one lying the night before? Eric and Dia told Dawn that Lexi had said that she was going to go meet up with a boy at a school not far away, and that the two had been texting all night long. Dawn reached out to the boy they said that she was talking to, and he agreed that they had been texting all night long, but they never made plans to meet up. He said that the last time that he heard from Lexi was around 12:30 a.m. on September 11th. It's unknown what the two were talking about, but I do know that Lexi had been at this boy's house the night before, and he claims that he never saw Lexi on the day of September 10th. With what the Millerbergs were saying and what he had said, Dawn was not having it. Something was wrong, someone wasn't telling the truth, and she was beyond worried, so she called the police. And in the beginning, though her gut was telling her something wasn't right, Dawn was kind of assuming that her daughter ran away again and that she would turn up within a few days. After being contacted by Dawn, the police started their rounds of questioning, and they began with the Millerbergs, the last known people to have seen Lexi. Eric and Dia told them a slightly different story. They said that Lexi had, in fact, come over to watch the children while they went out, and that she then left the home around 10 p.m. Previously, they told Dawn it was 11:30 p.m., so their timeline isn't quite matching up with their original story. Police also spoke to the boy that she had been texting, and he told them the same thing. He hadn't seen Lexi, and they had made no plans to meet up. When police were questioning Lexi's friends, they all were very hesitant to speak up. I think the majority of them were scared that they were having police interactions when they themselves know that they haven't been participating in the most wholesome things. I think they were scared to get caught and into trouble, and so they all kind of clammed up and weren't very helpful. But after speaking to them, it was clear that Lexi didn't run away like everyone was holding out hope for. And so things ramped up and the media picked up her story. Lexi's story was broadcasted on the local news and flyers were hung and a press conference was held. And though her friends weren't overly helpful answering questions to the police, they stepped up to do their part to help search for her. 2 weeks would go by and no sign of Lexi. And I know I say it all the time, but I cannot imagine living with that anguish and grief of not knowing where my child was, and to be forced to wake up every single day and continue living and hoping today would be the day for answers. It was 2 weeks after Lexi went missing that Dawn was at the grocery store when she rounded a corner and ran into Dia Millerberg doing her daily shopping. The two exchanged a few words, and to Dawn's surprise, Dia never once asked about Lexi or updates on the case. She pretended like nothing was wrong and like they were just acquaintances. Which, I mean, I guess they were, but given the fact that Lexi was last seen at her house, you would think that she would be more concerned, wanting to know updates, wanting to know how she can help, wanting to know if they had heard anything. Especially since this teenage girl was not only your kid's babysitter, but was someone who you spent time with at your house. She became your friend. How could you not inquire about updates or if Lexi had come home? Unless, of course, you were guilty and hiding something or you knew something more. And it seems like that was the feeling Dawn was also getting. She felt like Dia knew more. The police continued to actively work on this case and cover all of their bases. They repeatedly questioned the Millerbergs, and each time it seemed like Eric was getting more and more agitated and on edge by their questioning. And I'm sorry, they have every reason to question you, every reason to suspect at least Eric of being involved in something with Lexi. This dude had quite the record. On top of that, Brenna, Lexi's friend who first introduced her to the Millerbergs, started to speak more and more freely with police now that her friend had been missing for weeks. And what she told police had them on high alert. Nearly 3 weeks after 16-year-old Lexi Rasmussen vanished from the home where she had been babysitting on the night of September 10th, 2011, her good friend Brenna told the police that Eric and Dia Millerberg was not only providing Lexi with alcohol and marijuana frequently, she was also getting meth, heroin, and prescription medication from them. And Brenna told police that it was Eric who taught them how to smoke meth, and he also would inject them with the drugs as well. Brenna also admitted that she knew Lexi was engaging in sexual acts with the Millerbergs and that Lexi would be at their house up to 3 times a week, not only for drugs, but for sex as well. And it wasn't uncommon for the three to meet up at a hotel. And this just makes my blood boil. This couple is so disgusting. This is a teenage girl who they not only fed drugs and alcohol to, but they sexually took advantage of her. She was young, impressionable, likely not in the right state of mind because of the drug use. She could not, in my opinion, give consent. I don't care what the age of consent is in the state of Utah. There is just no freaking way. These people are predators. They were adults twice her age. They knew right from wrong. They knew what they were doing was wrong, and yet they chose to do so. Horrible, horrible people. And let us not forget, their 6-year-old and 9-month-old child was in that home as well. Meth was floating about. Weed, prescription drugs, syringes, needles, who knows what else. Ugh, It just makes me so mad and so disgusted and so sad, honestly, for their kids and for all of the teenagers that were exposed to all of this. Brenna told the authorities that as soon as she heard that Lexi was missing, she immediately knew that the Millerbergs had to be involved. And she even approached them to ask what had happened. They also told her the story that Lexi had left to meet up with a boy at a nearby school. Obviously, with this new information, Eric and Dia were the main suspects in this case. Authorities already had a running suspicion that they were somehow involved, but with Brenna coming forward, they started digging into them deeper. They learned that not only did Eric have this extensive criminal record, he was also a member of a white supremacist gang called the Silent Aryan Warriors. I guess he became affiliated with this group when he met another member during one of his previous prison sentences, and he joined the gang, got several tattoos for the gang on his body, and was fully committed to being a member. According to a Desert.com article, Eric was on probation for pleading guilty in 2010 to 2 counts of credit card fraud and 1 count of forgery. Of course, he violated his parole on several occasions when he was using Oxy and other drugs that he claimed he used because of a bad car accident. After failing to report to his required check-ins with adult probation and parole, he was picked up on a warrant on October 3rd. His probation was revoked quickly and he was sent to the Utah State Prison for up to 5 years, but no other charges were filed against him for Lexi. And on October 7th, nearly a month after Lexi went missing, Dia was also arrested for 2 counts of prescription fraud, and nothing to do with Lexi was filed against her at this time either. After their arrest, the police obtained a search warrant, and on October 9th, that search was executed. Authorities were seen removing multiple bags of evidence from the home, and by this point, everyone pretty much assumed that Eric and Dia were somehow involved in Lexi's disappearance, and the speculation was running wild. Obviously, the news stations were reporting that people who saw Lexi last were arrested on unrelated charges. So the community all collectively held their breaths, waiting for more information to come out. And they didn't have to wait long because two members of the Silent Aryan Warriors, you know, that white supremacist gang that Eric was affiliated with, came forward with damning information.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the men, whose name is Eric Smith, and just to keep things from getting confusing since both are named Eric, I'm going to refer to this Eric as Peanut, because apparently that is his gang-affiliated name, I guess, maybe, I don't know. I don't know why his name is this, and it's really not important, but Peanut said that on that night that Lexi vanished, September 10th to the early morning hours of September 11th, Eric Millerberg called Peanut and told him to come to the house with a car and don't ask questions. Apparently, Peanut didn't go over like Eric requested on that night, but he did go over the following day on September 12th. When Peanut got to the Millerberg's house, Eric told him that he needed help moving a body because Lexi had overdosed and he and Dia had taken her body and dumped it, but they didn't hide it very well. When Peanut asked him why he didn't just call police, Eric said that he didn't want to go back to prison and he and his wife Dia were concerned that they would lose custody of their kids. Which I find this concern from Eric and Dia funny, because you weren't concerned about losing custody of your kids when you were supplying teenagers with drugs and alcohol. You weren't concerned about losing your kids when you were teaching teenagers how to smoke and inject meth and heroin. You weren't concerned for your kids when you were strung out on drugs yourself. You were concerned about getting caught for killing this little girl and that the rest of your awful and disgusting secrets would come out. They are selfish and were only concerned with themselves. For whatever reason, Peanut agreed to help Eric move Lexi's body because Eric said that it wasn't hidden very well where he dumped it off of I-84. So Peanut and Eric roll up to the Tagger exit off of I-84 in Morgan County, Utah. The lifeless body of 16-year-old Lexi was barely hidden under some underbrush, and so the two decided that they were going to move her body further back into the wooded area. They also attempted to dig a grave, but the ground was too hard to dig a proper hole. So they put half of Lexi's body into a garbage bag and attempted to cover it with a muddy piece of foam and other foliage. The second person that came forward from Eric's gang gave a very similar story where Eric had reached out to him and asked for help. Eric told him what had happened and that he needed help moving a body, but this guy refused to help because it involved a teenage girl. Instead, this guy went straight to his attorney and they came forward to the police together. As part of a plea with investigators, Peanut led the authorities to the location where he and Eric moved Lexi's body in exchange for immunity. Finally, Lexi was found on October 18th after 38 days being missing. Lexi was found behind some trees in a secluded spot away from the highway. She was near a dirt access road that was located near the freeway exit, but this was a place where she likely wouldn't have been found if it weren't for Peanut coming forward. It would have been really hard to stumble upon her. Lexi was found partially stuffed inside of a garbage bag, lying in a fetal position. Because it had been 38 days and she had been exposed to the elements and wildlife activity, she was badly decomposed and visual identification was impossible. But they did believe it was Lexi because some of the jewelry she was wearing, as well as her neon-colored toenail polish. The body was sent to the medical examiner, and 4 days later, it was confirmed through dental records that it was in fact Lexi. An autopsy, of course, was done, and because of the level of decomposition, it did make it impossible to determine if any physical trauma or injuries were present on her body. But toxicology confirmed that Lexi's cause of death was from a lethal combination of heroin and methamphetamine. And the authorities officially announced that Eric and Dia Millerberg were the only suspects in the case. Now, while all of this was unfolding, even more people were coming forward with information, and those people were fellow inmates of Eric's. Eric, the big idiot that he was in prison bragging that he killed Lexi. According to an article published by the Salt Lake Tribune, Eric had even said, quote, "I hope it hurries up and snows before the hunting season," end quote. Eric was concerned. Without a snowstorm, a hunter or a fisherman would stumble across Lexi's body. And it was this statement that this inmate, which the article refers to him as inmate number 4, decided to come forward to police. He also was quoted saying that there are rules when it comes to prison culture. You don't mess with children, you don't mess with females, and he broke every code there is and was running around like it was a big game. KSL.com also reported that another inmate told police that Eric referred to himself as Watcher of the Flock, and that he would administer drugs to the teenagers that came to him so they, quote, wouldn't go elsewhere and try it on their own, end quote. I think Eric thought that he was some big savior or something, this watcher of the flock protecting them and teaching them the right ways to do drugs. But I'm sorry, no. This is wrong, and he absolutely was not watching out for them, and instead was encouraging them to be repeat customers of his. This same inmate also said that Eric told him about injecting Lexi with drugs before he, Lexi, and his wife engaged in sexual acts. This inmate said that Eric told him that Lexi had died at his home and that he couldn't revive her. After Lexi had finally been found and positively identified, investigators once again approached Eric, and he continued to deny having any involvement in her death. He acted shocked that she was found dead and said that he had no idea what happened. But when the authorities went to Dia, she finally decided to talk. Dia told the investigators that on the night of September 10th, she and Eric asked Lexi to watch their kids so that they could go shopping. But when Lexi got to the house, they decided that they would rather just chill at home and hang out with Lexi instead. Dia admitted that she first met Lexi in the spring of 2011, and they started selling her weed and alcohol on occasion. But it quickly progressed to a friendship, and it wasn't long before Lexi was asking for harder drugs like heroin and meth. Dia said that Lexi just wanted to try it, and they agreed to hook her up with the drugs. Dia said that it was in August that Lexi actually approached Eric and Dia about having sex with them, and they agreed. And I just want to pause here and say, I don't believe that for one second. I mean, I fully believe they provided her drugs willingly, and maybe Lexi did in fact want to experiment with other drugs as well, but I feel like they completely groomed and manipulated and influenced this young girl, and she didn't come up with these ideas on her own, especially this sexual relationship. I fully do not believe one bit that it was Lexi who first approached these two grown-ass adults asking them for sex. I think Eric and Dia saw an opportunity to take advantage of a vulnerable teenage girl who trusted them and felt comfortable with them, and they wanted to fulfill some sick fantasy that they had. I think they used drugs as a way to manipulate and lure Lexi into doing exactly what they wanted. But that is just my own personal opinion here. Dia said that on that night of September 10th, they put the kids to bed and Eric asked if they all wanted to get high. They, of course, said yes, and so Eric prepared syringes of heroin and meth. Dia injected herself while Eric injected himself and Lexi. After that, Dia said that she and Lexi drove 32 minutes to Layton, Utah to visit a Walgreens to pick up a prescription that Dia had filled. This was confirmed by footage recovered from the Walgreens that shows Dia and Lexi picking up the prescription around 10:20 p.m. Dia said after that, the two drove around for a bit before stopping off somewhere to pick up more drugs from someone else, and then they returned home around midnight. When they got home, Eric prepared three more syringes to inject. And Dia said she again injected herself, and Eric injected himself, and then he injected Lexi in her neck. Which, injecting in the neck is risky in and of itself and creates an increased risk of serious freaking complications. Dia said that she was surprised to see that Eric did it in her neck. Apparently that wasn't usually where he would inject her, but overall Lexi seemed fine after and was even expressing that she was feeling the highest that she had ever felt. They do say that injecting into the neck can cause the drugs to hit you faster because of major arteries in that area. So maybe that's why she felt so high, because she still had the other stuff in her system. I don't know, but according to Dia, all was well. And it was after that that Lexi asked Eric and Dia to have sex with her. Then, after they tried for some time, Eric prepared three more syringes of drugs and injected Lexi again, which blows my mind. I don't know personally how any of this works, but that sounds like a lot of drugs within such a small window of time. And it was after this third round of drugs that Lexi started experiencing side effects that she had never experienced before. She kept telling the Millerbergs that she felt cold and even asked them if she could take a bath in their master bathroom. They started a warm bath for her, and after sitting in it for 45 minutes, Lexi still wasn't warming up and still felt extremely cold. So Dia took her out of the bath, wrapped her in blankets, and told her to lie down on their bed. While Lexi was trying to warm up in their bed, Dia and Eric went outside to smoke a cigarette and left her unattended, according to Dia, for 30 minutes. When they came inside, they found that Lexi was not breathing and she had foam coming from her mouth. Dia, being a registered nurse, began CPR on Lexi, but it was too late. Both Dia and Eric panicked, not knowing what to do next. Dia claims that she wanted to call the police, but it was Eric who refused to let her, saying that he wasn't going to go back to prison. And he told her that she would lose the kids and that Dia would get the death penalty for killing Lexi. So instead of calling the police, Dia dressed Lexi in her clothing, stuffed her body into a footlocker, and placed the locker in the trunk of their car. They drove around aimlessly for quite some time, looking for a place to dump her body, and decided on that wooded area off of I-84. In a panic, they pulled her body from the footlocker and quickly dumped it before taking off again. Dia said that they drove around for a while trying to find different places to throw away Lexi's purse, cell phone, the footlocker they used to transport her body in, as well as the carpet lining of the trunk of their car. They knew enough about evidence and DNA to think to remove the carpet from the car, and Eric took it another step further, and 2 weeks later after Lexi's death, he even sold the car. I really do think that they thought that they were going to get away with this. Now, if you want my opinion, I am not sure I fully believe this version of events. Sure, there are probably pieces of it that are true, and they did uncover some evidence to go with her story. But I don't think Dia is as innocent as she tried to paint herself out to be. She says it was all of Eric with the drugs. It was Lexi who wanted to get high and have sex. I just really don't think that's the full story. And even if it is, Lexi was a minor and they were adults. I know I keep saying that, but it's true. The adults should have never been running around, hanging out, doing drugs, and sexually abusing this teenager. Point blank, period. Police tracked down the car that Eric sold and were able to confirm that the carpeting from the trunk was in fact missing, like Dia claimed. Police also had found during one of their searches at the Millerberg home, a spot in the bedroom where the carpet had been deliberately cut out and removed. And they found trace amounts of blood around this area, as well as traces of Lexi's blood on the couch, likely from being injected with drugs while sitting on the couch. Finally, in early 2012, both Eric and Dia were charged with Lexi's death. Dia was charged with obstructing justice, desecration of a body, and acquiring prescription drugs unlawfully. Eric was charged with child abuse, homicide, obstruction of justice, unlawful sexual conduct with a minor, and desecration of a human body. Since it was Dia who first cooperated with police, she was offered a plea deal for her to testify against Eric, and she agreed. In February 2012, Dia officially filed for divorce and waited patiently for Eric's trial to begin. In July 2013, while awaiting his trial, Eric was attacked in prison by his cellmate and had to go to the hospital. According to Fox 13, on July 2nd, Eric was stabbed over 22 times inside his cell at the Utah State Prison with a crudely made knife. His injuries were non-life-threatening, unfortunately, and after being treated, he was returned back to the prison where he was moved into a new housing unit. His cellmate Simon Russell Scown was charged with attempted murder. And on February 10th, 2014, Eric's trial began in the 2nd District Court in Ogden, Utah. What came as a complete shock to everyone was that when Eric walked into that courtroom, he looked like a completely different man. He had grown out his red hair that he now wore slicked back. He was wearing a suit and tie that covered all of his tattoos. He shaved his face and sported glasses. It was obvious they were trying to make him look like a nice guy and not like the drug and child abusing, disgusting human that he truly is. Dia was put on the stand and told the same story she gave authorities. Eric, however, didn't take the stand, but the defense tried to pin all of the blame on Dia, saying it was Dia who was responsible for Lexi's death, and it was her who injected all of the drugs into Lexi that night. They also put Lexi's friend Brenna on the stand, and she talked all about the relationship that Lexi had with the Millerbergs and the things that she saw while attending parties at their house. Of course, they also put on those gang members and the inmates who came forward with information on the stand as well. And when the jury was finally released to deliberate, it only took them 90 minutes to come back with a guilty verdict on all counts. And he was sentenced to life in prison. In 2014, Dia had her day in court where she pled guilty on all charges as part of her plea deal. At her sentencing hearing, Lexi's mother spoke while Dia sat there crying. When it was Dia's turn to make a statement, she turned to Lexi's family to address them. I will have the link in the description of this episode if you guys are interested in watching it, but I have to say, it kind of pissed me off. Dia is making a show of crying and having a hard time breathing, but I see not a single tear shed from her eyes as she's sitting there talking about how appalled and disgusted she is by her actions. She struggles to get the words out to tell them that they're in her prayers and she hopes that they're able to forgive her and that God will bring them peace. And again, she seems very forced as she's gasping and gagging for air with her words and her fake tears. Dia was sentenced to 5 years in prison, but she only served 4 years and 2 months. She was released early on October 16th, 2018, after she was let out for good behavior and for completing some rehabilitation program. I do not agree with this sentence at all. 5 years was not enough for her role in Lexi's murder. I don't give a damn if they unintentionally killed her. These were adults supplying teens with drugs, alcohol, and sexually abusing them. I really don't understand how these adults got to this point, how they thought that any of this was going to be a good idea, especially Dia, a registered nurse with children of her own. It really just blows my mind. It makes me so mad that this woman is now out there living her life like nothing ever happened, like she didn't help aid in killing this teen girl, that she didn't help dispose of her body, that she didn't help stuff her in a footlocker and then put it in the trunk and drive around while her dead quote-unquote friend was in the back. It doesn't make any kind of sense to me, but whatever. You guys will have to let me know what you think of this sentence, and do you believe Dia's story that Eric was the main one to blame? I will say that when you read up on this case, you will see that people are a bit divided on this case. Many believe that Eric and Dia deserved what they got, or worse, but others don't think that they should be held responsible at all because Lexi had been making poor choices and had been willingly doing drugs with them for many months. And with that, I don't agree. Sure, she made some poor decisions to experiment with drugs and got wrapped up in a bad group of friends, but at the end of the day, she's a freaking child. 16 or not, she's still a kid. Teens are easily influenced. They can't fully comprehend that all of their actions have serious consequences. Sure, she was probably educated that drugs are bad, but I just feel like with all of the bad influences around her, being impressionable and vulnerable, she was easily taken advantage of. I feel like Eric and Dia Millerberg saw her as a plaything that they could mold into whatever they wanted her to be. And for them, it was their teenage babysitter that they got high and sexually took advantage of. Even though they say it was Lexi that wanted to start this quote-unquote sexual relationship with them, I think it's far more likely that it was them who wanted to lure a beautiful young teen girl into their bedroom, and that they did it by feeding her drugs and creating an addict that they could manipulate. Again, you guys will have to let me know what your thoughts are on all of this. This case is sad, it's tragic, and I really feel for Lexi's parents. I can't imagine how tough it was to find out all of this stuff about your daughter after she was gone. And I'm sure they had a lot of questions on how they missed the signs that something was awry. My heart goes out to all of Lexi's family and friends and those who knew and loved her. Crimesters, that is all that I have for this week's episode. I do want to hear your thoughts this week, so make sure that you are a part of my private Facebook group. You can find it by searching Crime with Holly Podcast Discussion Group. In there, I share all information and pictures pertaining to the cases that I cover, and I also encourage all members to share all things true crime. You can also find me over on Instagram at Crimeaholly, where I post a lot of my regular life content, but true crime content as well. Lastly, check out for those links in my bio to sign up for my Patreon and to also suggest a case in my case suggestion form. All right, guys, that is all. I will be back next week with another all new episode. Until then, be aware and take care. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.